You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are so glad to have our guest on the show today, Dr. Shamini Jain, whose work on healing and the power of the mind is encouraging people to think twice about the area of medicine. So this is going to be a very interesting topic that we haven't really covered much before on this show. So we're very excited here on Women Investing in Women and Girls. First of all, Shamini, I'd like to welcome you to the show. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Michelle. I'm really happy to be here.
We're just so honored to have you. And something that I find is so interesting about, you know, your pursuit towards the topics of medicine and health is the fact that you started this at a pretty young age. And you talked about this in your TED Talk that we'll get to later on. But you don't see a lot of young kids looking into the topics of medicine and health and so on. So what motivated you to do so?
Thanks for that question. You know, it's I get asked this sometimes, and I have to say, I think it was really just being brought up in the culture that I was brought up in. So I was brought up in a spiritual tradition called Jainism, and I've just always been an avid reader. So I think it was really just curiosity that led me to reading all of these books and then questioning what I was reading. And probably because my father is also a scientist, it really led me to deeply question how we understood health and how we might be able to bridge Eastern and Western perspectives to better guide our health.
Right. So what do you find most exhilarating about the field of medicine? If this is something that you were looking into from when you were younger, and it's obviously something that you're very much involved in now. So from the time that you first looked into the areas of medicine to now, what do you continuously find is the most exciting part about it?
There are several parts. I'd say the first is just that we're coming to a place where there are just exponential understandings in science and technology that are really driving forward our knowledge base of healing. And because of that, there's more of an openness to exploring different points of view that might have seemed absolutely crazy in the past. And I'd love to give you an example. I come from a research area known as psychoneuroimmunology, which is, you know, quite a word. It's quite a mouthful. But really, psychoneuroimmunology is all about understanding the connections between our mind, our immune system, and our brain. And 40 years ago, and maybe less, when you know, there were several scientists suggesting that, hey, you know, we're looking at data suggesting that there are these connections between the immune system and the brain. They were completely laughed at. I mean, at that time, you know, the idea that those, even the immune system and the brain would be connected was just something that scientists couldn't wrap their mind around. And I think part of that is because, you know, we're trained as people, as scientists, to kind of focus in on one thing. And so even if you go to the university or you go to medicine, you study general principles of medicine, but then you have to kind of decide, am I going to study neurology or am I going to study the gut or whatever? And it's like that even for PhDs, for people that are doing science in different areas. You focus a lot on one thing and you don't have a chance to really collaborate and discuss science with other scientists in different fields. Mm-hmm. Now what we're seeing is that there are all these scientists and clinicians, doctors, nurses, that are coming together to try to solve common conundrums around medicine. And because we're bringing all of these different people together and these different minds together, we're able to create things that we couldn't create before. So, for example, in psychoneuroimmunology, a word that was completely laughed at 40 years ago, we now know that the immune system is not only connected to the brain, it's connected to our gut. The brain is connected to the gut. We have mounds of evidence over the last 30 years looking at how our psychological states, particularly stress, can affect our disease progression. And those things were really only possible because people started reaching out to other scientists outside of their field and began to ask deeper questions and weren't afraid to ask them. So I would say that's really been the most exciting thing that I've been witnessing over the past several years in this field, and I think it's just going to continue to explode in terms of interdisciplinary collaboration.
Right. It's such an amazing aspect of the medical field, and the fact that you do have the opportunity to work with people from all different fields to offer their expertise. Now, I want to remind everyone out there that you are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. We are with our guest today, Dr. Shamini John. Dr. Shamini, I want to talk more about your TED Talks. And the topic that you focused on in this TED Talk I found was very intriguing. But first of all, I'd like to know from you what it was like to have your own TED Talk. What was that experience like?
Well, that was really neat. And it was definitely not something that I had done before. So, you know, as I mentioned, and as you know, I'm a scientist primarily. And so we're used to giving talks and we're used to kind of death by PowerPoint. So, you know, and scientists are often kind of known for putting together their talks on the plane as they're flying to a conference. This was not like that. I learned quite a bit. I had an amazing speaker coach that I worked with, Barbara Seymour Giordano, who has a company called LA Storyworks. And it was really a privilege to work with her. So as part of the process, this was for TEDx Orange County, which I believe is rated as one of the top 10 TEDx's in the world. I had no idea. They just happened to ask me, and I really didn't know what the process was going to be like. They really encouraged me to not just hide behind my data, but really be more involved in the story and the meaning behind the results. And I really appreciated that. So not to mention, I met some incredible, incredible people.
I'm sure. It must have been such a great experience for you. Now, you talked about, again, the topic of healing and medicine, medical thought. What did you enjoy about speaking to audiences that may or may not know too much about the subject? What was it like speaking to them about this?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'll admit it. So like I mentioned, I've given lots of talks before, but it's, you know, I don't think I've ever given a talk to over 2,000 people before. Right. And, you know, the people that come to TEDx events and TED Talks are so intelligent, so inquiring. And so I wondered what it would be like to stand out there and talk with them about, you know, this subject, which is, as you said, it's not something that's normally discussed all the time. And when I walked out there on the stage, any sense of nervousness that I might have had walking out there was just completely gone. Because you could literally feel, I mean, you know, not to get too airy-fairy here, but you could literally feel the love when you stepped out into the audience. There was just such a feeling of, you know, of support and, you know, engagement with the audience. It was really, really fun to talk with them.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the best aspects of TED Talks is that the audience and those of you, us who then watch those videos online, is that we just learn so much about so many different topics. And what I found so interesting about your topic is that you focused on two kind of bodies of thought when it comes to medicine. And we'll get to that in a little bit later in the conversation. But I want to talk to you about the idea that, you know, it's so easy for people to, you know, find symptoms that they have, look it up online, and then run to the nearest doctor to get a prescription. But do you think that this system, that people depend too much on modern medical approaches than on different ways to treat different symptoms and different things in medicine?
Yeah, it's a great question, Michelle. I do think that there's a gap in us understanding what it is that we can do for ourselves to figure out when things might be going in a direction that's not really positive for our health. So that's number one is, you know, do we have the tools? Are we being given the tools for us to better be aware of our own health process before we get some kind of disease? And, you know, sometimes we call that kind of information in the prevention area. You know, and the other is, yeah, do we have a sense of empowerment on what we can do to facilitate our own health? Are we aware of the kinds of data that are out there? Are we being taught the kinds of practices that would help us guide our own health so that we don't necessarily panic and feel like we've got to go to someone else to fix it? Now, I'm totally, you know, pro going to the doctor. You know, it's important that we go to a medical professional that helps us, you know, understand how the state of our health is. And if there is something wrong, we certainly need to have it checked out. But we can avoid a lot of the panic that I think many of us can feel when something goes wrong by being better equipped to handle things so that we're healthy more of the time. And when we talk about being healthy, it's not just on the physical level. It's on the mental level, the emotional level, and even our social level. Because, I mean, one of the things that we found in psychoneuroimmunology that is so incredibly powerful for our health are our social connections. So I think there's a tremendous amount that we can learn and take in ourselves on how to guide our own health. And the Consciousness and Healing Initiative that I run is going to play a huge role in helping provide that information to the general public.
Excellent. Well, this conversation is just getting started. We have plenty more to talk about after we get back from our first break. I want to invite all of you to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter. Be sure to use the hashtags womeninvest, #girlsinvest, and #weproceed. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
And welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I am your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are going to get right back to our conversation with our guest today, Dr. Shamini Jain. Before we went to the break, we talked a little bit about an introduction to her background in the medical field, as well as with her TED Talk. And that's where we're going to start off for this part. This TED Talk that you had, Shamini, was just so engaging and so interesting, and I want to talk more about what you focused your conversation about, specifically on, you know, the two models of medicine that we may not be aware of are out there. So I'd like for you to explain the difference between both the medical model and the complementary medicine model that you mentioned a little bit in your talk.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, as I mentioned in the talk, in the TED Talk, if we really wanted to try to break it down into how we see medicine practiced today in the West and even across the globe, we seem to have two major models of medicine. And the first is often called the medical model. And this is the idea that disease starts from something outside that somehow gets in the body. So we talk about things like pathogens, things that invade the body, and those can be, you know, a germ or a bullet wound or something like that. And so the goal of modern medicine is really to get rid of that pathogen. It's to take it out. And so we develop tools like surgery, drugs, and things like that to really get out the pathogen, take out the disease. And so a lot of our medical approaches are focused, you know, in that way. It's the reason we do chemotherapy and radiation for cancer. It's the reason we do surgery. And all of those things can be incredibly helpful, especially in emergency situations and in other situations. Then there's this other model of medicine that's actually been around for thousands of years that in the West is called complementary or integrative medicine. And in other countries has been known as just traditional medicine approaches. And those medical approaches are things like Ayurvedic medicine, Tibetan medicine, Native American medicine, Chinese medicine. And the approach is a little bit different because here they're talking about health as really a balance between systems. And so they place a lot of emphasis on the balance between the systems and our harmony with the environment. So that might sound a little bit, you know, too conceptual, but to give you an example, there are frameworks within those forms of medicine that very much lay out how what we eat, how we think, how we behave, what we feel actually affect our physical health. Sometimes I call these consciousness-based because they really point to the importance of our own consciousness in driving our health effects. And so they might still recommend things like herbs, you know, mind-body practices like meditation and yoga, lifestyle changes, diet changes, but it's all with this idea that one is bringing greater harmony to the whole system and to the whole person, both on a physical, emotional, social, and spiritual level.
Mm-hmm. Now, talking about this mind-body connection that tends to be you know, more for the complementary or integrative medicine model, you know, this is something that Westerners tend to be a little more skeptical about, that we might think, okay, you know, yoga it's an exercise. They think it might be, you know, a hobby of someone, but they don't see it as a true healing technique. So what will it take for, you know, the idea of these types of medicine, these types of treatments to be thought of as a treatment as opposed to, you know, something that we hear about from other parts of the world?
Oh, absolutely. Great question. And, you know, I think the evidence is mounting for so many of these different approaches. And if we go back to an earlier part of this conversation where I was talking about the field of psychoneuroimmunology, recall that, you know, as I had said before, there was a lot of skepticism around this idea that there was a connection between the immune system and the brain and that our mental states and our emotional states could affect our health. And now, of course, you know, 40 years later, there's tremendous evidence suggesting that our emotions and our mental state have a huge impact on our health. The same is being found for what are called now in the West these mind-body practices like meditation and yoga. So not only do we know that things like stress and social isolation affect us right down to the genetic level, and these papers are published in some of the top-tier scientific journals in the country, like Nature, for example, and other very well-established, prestigious scientific journals, there are now studies demonstrating that practices like meditation and yoga also affect our immune system. They also affect our brains. And so we'll continue to see results and research kind of focusing on these physically beneficial aspects of these practices. But the question that I have is, I think, a little bit deeper in that what I'm interested in understanding is whether these practices, as they're described in ancient texts that, you know, are really consciousness-based, do they have an effect on what we're calling our vital energy system or the biofield? And is the biofield actually a means for us to better understand how things like yoga, meditation, and even diet affect our physical health? This area is considered right now to be pretty controversial and fringe, and yet we see that industry is already mapping out electromagnetic readouts of the body because they're developing devices to manipulate the electromagnetic emanations of our body for health. If you're interested, we can talk about this more.
Definitely. Once again, you're listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls, and we are with our guest today, Dr. Shamini Jain, and we are talking about traditional medicine. And we're going to talk more about your research, Shamini, a little bit later in the conversation, but more about the traditional medicine route. If this type of medicine has been proven to be effective for thousands of years, and, you know, there's documentation of this all over the world, then why do you think Americans and, you know, other Westerners, why do we still prefer to hold on to those healing methods based on a more modern medical model, if you will?
Thank you, Michelle. You know, what I would say is I don't think it has to be really an either or. I mean, I think where the true future of medicine is going to lie is in us bridging all of the tools and technologies that we have, both ancient and modern. But I do agree with you that, you know, there is sort of a hesitation and sometimes a skepticism around some of these more ancient techniques. And I think that really has to do with worldview. Sometimes, you know, some of my colleagues will talk about this as an emphasis on materialism. That is, you know, the idea that our bodies are kind of like machines, that we only really exist in the physical level, that consciousness is just an epiphenomenon of our brain, meaning that consciousness is created by our brain. And, you know, one of the ways that we talk about this is, you know, we can hold on to that view. There's nothing wrong with that view. But could we also entertain the view that our brain, rather than creating consciousness, is actually a receiver for consciousness? So, you know, your television is a perfect example. Does the television actually create content, or is it a receiver for content? So I want to make clear that I don't think there's any right answer to this, but understanding that some of these practices from Eastern and other indigenous traditions really come from a totally different perspective than what we're used to here in the US in terms of thinking that everything is based in the physical. That's part of the reason for the disconnect. So the more I think that we actually engage in these practices and experience them for ourselves, the more I think we'll be open to these different points of view on how they might work.
Right. And I'm sure this merging of the two types of thought is also going to change the way that medicine is taught in this country and in other Western countries that use the modern medicine model, right?
Absolutely. You know, and we're already seeing that in major universities. So, you know, there are several universities across the country and the world that are teaching integrative medicine approaches in medical schools. These are evidence-based approaches where medical students are, of course, still learning all of the important things that they need to learn about how the body works, how the immune system works, how the brain works. But they're also getting now classes around diet and the impact of the mind on the body. And so we're moving more and more to this integrated understanding of healing and medicine, and it's extremely exciting. So, you know, these courses and these integrative medicine centers are at, you know, prestigious universities like Harvard, UCSF, University of Minnesota, University of Michigan, UC San Diego, UCLA, and, you know, numerous others.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all terrific, and it is so exciting to be part of a time that there is this amount of development in the medical field and in other fields that are related to this as well. We are going to take another break, but remember to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting, or on Twitter, you can use the hashtags womeninvest, #girlsinvest, and #WeForShe. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
And welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are with our guest today, Dr. Shamini Jain. Before we went to the break, we talked about the difference between a modern medical approach and a more complementary integrative medicine model. And, you know, Shamini's great work within those two different fields. We're going to focus on that for this part of our discussion. Now, Shamini, you've done some excellent research in this topic, and I'd like for you to talk about how important it is to research in the medical field, first of all.
Thanks. Sure. You know, as a scientist, I can't take anything for face value. So, you know, I can read a book that a yogi has written and, you know, and kind of get a sense of what this author has said about the importance of yoga or other healing practices on the physical system. But that doesn't mean much unless we can actually see it and we can know that it actually affects patients. So for my dissertation study at UC San Diego, I was really interested in knowing what we could do for the problem of cancer-related fatigue. Now, Michelle, I don't know if anyone you know has been touched by cancer. Most likely, you know, probably yes, because most of us have been touched by cancer in some way through ourselves or through our families.
Right.
One of the things that I was really surprised to learn when I was a student was that fatigue, you know, as we know, is a major problem in cancer, and, you know, getting things like chemotherapy, radiation can sometimes increase our fatigue. But what was really surprising to me was to hear that over a third of cancer patients, after they're done with treatment, after they've done surgery, they've done chemo, they've done radiation, their fatigue persists for over 10 years and sometimes more. And they're just not able to do the things that they used to do, whether it's exercise, meditation, spending time with family, or whatever. So it's really debilitating. And what surprised me further was finding out that there were no good established treatments, whether they were drugs, whether they were lifestyle, behavioral things. There was nothing that we had been found that was particularly effective in reducing this persistent cancer-related fatigue that many cancer survivors face. So as I mentioned, you know, I was a graduate student at the time, and I also am a student of healing approaches. And I went to my teacher and I said, if you were going to do a healing approach with fatigue breast cancer survivors, what would you do? And she described it to me, and it's essentially a hands-on healing technique. It falls under the rubric of what's sometimes called biofield therapies. And just for a second, because many of the listeners may not be familiar with this term biofield, I'll just describe it very succinctly. It is a field of energy and information that is both electromagnetic in nature and potentially non-electromagnetic in nature that is thought to regulate the functioning of a human system or human organism, living systems in general. So that, of course, sounds very, very airy-fairy. You can imagine, you know, scratching your head thinking, how can I do a study around something like a hands-on healing technique? And, you know, these techniques are known, you know, by others as things like Reiki, healing touch, therapeutic touch, pranic healing. There's a lot of them out there, and a lot of people are practicing them. In fact, a lot of nurses practice healing touch. There's an entire certification process one has to go through and so forth. But then the question is, you know, is this really effective? So I decided to take a look and see whether a hands-on healing approach could be effective and try to determine whether or not, if it was effective, could it all be explained by placebo elements, meaning things like expectation, whether people just expected to feel better, or were they more due to things like our relationship? Was it that, you know, the person just felt loved and they felt cared for and they were being touched, and, you know, and would that be driving the effects versus any particular type of energy per se? Right. So that was the function, that was the purpose of the study that I did. It was what's called a randomized controlled trial, which is a gold standard way of doing research in clinical trials, where you have a group of people who receive, you know, the treatment that you're studying, and then you have a group of people that are getting what's called a placebo intervention. In this case, they were people who were being touched by people who pretended to be healers, who did the same kinds of hand placements, but really weren't trained in the healing techniques and were told to just simply touch the person and go into planning mind. And then we had what's called a weightless control group, which were just women that carried on with their treatment as usual, whatever they were particularly doing. Mm-hmm. And we followed those groups over time. And what we found were substantial decreases in fatigue over a month's period for women who received the hands-on healing intervention, as well as a pretty decent decrease for women who were receiving the placebo intervention.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it really was. And then when we looked further, we found that placebo factors like belief actually predicted quality of life. But what was really interesting was when we looked at the physiological function of these patients, and we looked at cortisol variability, which is essentially looking at the rhythm of cortisol over the day. The cortisol rhythm over the day seems to be particularly important in predicting how well a cancer patient and survivor is doing. It's been linked to fatigue, depression, and even mortality in breast cancer patients. So we thought this would be a really important biomarker to look at in this population. When we looked at cortisol variability, we found that cortisol variability improved only for the women who were receiving healing, not for the women that were in the placebo group, and not for the women that didn't receive treatment as usual. Okay. So it was a very interesting study.
That sounds, it is very interesting. And, you know, the fact that this research was done was truly groundbreaking, and it was featured on places like the Time Magazine and CNN. So what was that like to have, you know, this much attention on the research that you've been doing on this?
I think it speaks to the interest that people have in this. I think people are hungry for understanding more about how things like subtle energy and their own self-healing practices can influence their own health. And so I found it, you know, really great that that people were interested in this and interested in knowing about the results.
Excellent. Once again, you're listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls, and we are talking with our guest on the show today, Dr. Shamini Jain. And now, Shamini, you've been working in different universities. And, you know, for those of you out there who may be medical students yourself or interested in the medical field, you know, can you explain or can you provide some advice to maybe some medical students on how to approach their education and how they're able to distinguish themselves in their field, especially if, like we talked about, if this field is changing over time?
Yeah, I would say the first thing is, you know, discover your passion and then pursue it. So, and when you're pursuing your passion, and sometimes that's difficult, okay, I was a PhD student, not a medical student, but I've had many friends who've gone through medical school and even done MD PhDs. So I know what a process it is. It's, mm-hmm. it's long, it's arduous. Sometimes it's very tiring. You don't get a lot of time. And so in those circumstances, sometimes it's even hard to figure out what your passion is because you're just so busy in the daily grind. So the first piece of advice I would say is if and whenever possible, take some downtime, take some time to just relax and reflect, and, you know, and don't feel like you have to be in a rush to figure it all out. Once the time comes where you've really discovered what your passion is, if you don't already know, then seek out people who have the same kinds of passions, and particularly mentors who are open to what your passions are. I've been tremendously fortunate because I've worked with amazing mentors who really fostered my growth and, you know, understood where my passions lied and, you know, didn't try to necessarily steer me in a different direction, but really supported my progress. And so I would say finding those kinds of mentors really, really helps. And even finding, you know, like-minded peers who can support you in what you want to do is extremely helpful.
That's some great insight. And we definitely appreciate your input. And, you know, being a student isn't the easiest. So to have someone who has been through that, both as an undergraduate and then getting your PhD, I feel like you would be an excellent source to know, you know, how to be successful in that setting. When we come back from our next break, we're going to talk more about the work that Chamonix is doing and helping to develop the two different schools of thought when it comes to medicine. But remember, we do want you to connect with us and let us know what you're thinking about this conversation. Go to Facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, be sure to use the hashtags womeninvest, #girlsinvest, and #nutrisheet. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are with our guest today, Dr. Chamonix Jain. Before we went to the break, we talked about some of the research and work that Chamonix is doing in the field of medicine, but also exploring the different types of ways that the mind connects with the body in helping to heal someone. And now we're going to talk about one of the initiatives that Chamonix created and is doing some very impressive work in this area, the Consciousness and Healing Initiative. So, Chamonix, you're the founder and director of this initiative, and I'd love to know from you, first of all, what motivated you to create this initiative?
You know, as we discussed, I've been in this field for a bit and worked in universities, worked in nonprofits, and I ask myself sometimes, why aren't we seeing more progress in this area? And I truly believe that one of the reasons that we haven't is because we're just not organized. We're not networked. And so we have all these amazing organizations and people that are kind of working in their own silos. There's not enough funding support to really support some of the basic science, even though the initial results are promising. And there needs to be a lot more effort in kind of getting this information out to the public in a way that they can be used. So, you know, with that in mind, it became very clear that the thing to do is to organize ourselves into an initiative that links together different stakeholders in this area of consciousness and healing. And so that includes scientists, it includes innovators, it includes doctors and practitioners, and educators, and even artists, for us to really deeply understand the depths of consciousness and healing, do the real world science and application around that, and provide that as a service to the public. So that's really what motivated me to start that. And the Consciousness and Healing Initiative, I describe as a collaborative accelerator of all of these different stakeholders to forward the real world science and application of consciousness and healing. We already have several partners, including the Miraglow Foundation, which is the foundation of Mimi Guarneri and Rowney King, both pioneers in the integrative medicine field. The Chopra Foundation, which many may know as the foundation of Deepak Chopra himself. And the Institute of Noetic Sciences, who has been doing cutting-edge work in the areas of consciousness and healing for decades. We also have several different collaborating organizations that we work with across the globe, including people and organizations at major universities. And we've done quite a bit already on the science side. Last September, we organized a meeting with, you know, all of the different partners that I mentioned and other stakeholders who funded a transdisciplinary meeting in this area called Biofield Science. And I mention this because I think we're going to see a lot more thought and discussion around this area of what is called biofield science. We're already seeing it in industry. We're seeing a lot in the areas of what are called neural modulation or the use of electromagnetic technologies to stimulate healing and treat disease in pharmaceutical companies. So these are approaches like repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is being used right now to treat resistant depression. We're going to be seeing this more in use for pain. There are studies right now looking at these approaches, different types of approaches in Alzheimer's disease and even paralysis. And GlaxoSmithKline themselves have actually offered a $1 million prize to the groups that can begin to really map out the bioelectromagnetic readouts of the body. So wow. You have, yeah, it's going to be very huge. And in fact, the industry of bioelectromagnetics and neuromodulation in particular is slated to move from about three-something billion this year in 2015 to over $6 billion in 2020. So many are heralding this as, you know, as the area of electroceuticals and really the next wave of big pharma. And that's all really exciting. But you also have companies that are saying, hey, you know what? If you're feeling depressed or sad, just slap this electrode on your head and press a button and you'll feel better. So we could do that, or we could actually choose to invest some of our resources in some of the basic science looking at these approaches that have also been said to modulate these bioelectromagnetic readouts of the body that are completely self-directed, like yoga and meditation and these hands-on healing practices I mentioned. And so I think one of the purposes of the Consciousness and Healing Initiative is to make sure that we're really creating a clear and complete picture on how this area of the biofield is involved in health and in our own generation and maintenance of health. So within Qi, we have the interdisciplinary science sector, which involves pure science and also technology innovation aspects. We have embodied education, which means that, you know, we take this information, provide it to the public through workshops, through videos, so people understand what the data is and they're able to actually engage in these practices. And then, of course, we have service projects as well to make sure that the things that we're doing are really serving underserved communities.
It's so amazing. And I love the fact that there is this sense of collaboration between all of these different disciplines, that you do get the benefit of having the expertise of scientists, of doctors, of different, experts in their fields, and you have so much more input, and the solutions that you're able to create through this initiative must be that much, you know, more rich and that much more effective. So that's very exciting to hear. Now, you are also using this initiative to help some groups of people. And like you said, have different ways that they can treat something that kind of strays away from the norm. And one of those that I found most interesting are actually trauma patients, specifically women and girls that might have had early trauma. And if you could talk more about how this initiative is helping those women and girls heal.
Absolutely. One of our deepest interests is in understanding how healing approaches might be able to lift, you know, the psychological, the physical, emotional residues of trauma. And one thing that I learned recently that I didn't know before was that survivors of domestic violence actually have huge amounts of traumatic brain injury. So we hear a lot about the NFL players and, you know, and other players that play, you know, different competitive sports and the brain injuries that they get as a result. And of course, combat veterans and the huge problem that we have there with traumatic brain injury or TBI. What folks may not know is that many survivors of domestic violence actually also suffer from traumatic brain injury, and their care is not really well managed. So they'll just, you know, often they come to a women's center. A lot of these women aren't necessarily of major, you know, financial means. And, you know, they're complaining of all these symptoms, and then they're diagnosed with traumatic brain injury. And so the question is, what are we doing for those women? You know, there are all these, you know, reasons, obviously, besides just general humanitarian reasons, to be treating them. The incidence of traumatic brain injury in domestic violence survivors actually far surpasses those of NFL players. So the Consciousness and Healing Initiative is interested in supporting people and organizations that are providing healing services to these women, and then placing some metrics around what they're doing. So one of the important things we need to do for these types of programs and services is empower them with data so that they can then scale up their programs. So we're interested in investigating from a pure science point of view what happens when people are afforded these kinds of healing approaches, whether they're mind-body approaches like yoga, breathing, guided imagery, hands-on healing. Can we understand how those work on the deeper physical level as well as the emotional and social level? And then can we draw some attention to the societal issue and actually provide some services to women in need who are receiving, you know, services for this trauma? It's a really important societal issue that I think we need to be placing our attention to.
Absolutely. And to go off of this point, you know, not only for women and girls, but for anyone that this medical technology can help with, how can we empower ourselves from the inside out through these methods?
Well, first, I'd like to just offer that our website, which should be up in October, depending on when this is aired, I just want to mention that the website for the Consciousness and Healing Initiative, www.chi.is or chi.is, we'll be providing a tremendous number of resources, both in terms of the information base and practical tips on how we can empower ourselves with consciousness and healing practices. So that's number one. There will be a lot of information there. We also have a Facebook site that we post a lot of information on regularly. That's facebook.com/consciousnessandhealing. So people can go to those sites to get more information on these practices from a scientifically grounded base. Because that is really important. We want to be clear that anything that that we're discussing has a solid evidence base behind it.
Definitely. You know, the work that you're able to do through, you know, the initiative and through your research and your work within universities, it's all so inspiring. And I think that it's great that we were able to have this level of exposure on this topic, because not a lot of people know the differences between, you know, the more traditional ways of medicine with the more modern ways of medicine, and to get this understanding and then to learn more about how a healing process can be more than just a prescription, I think is very special. So I'd like to thank you so much, Dr. Chamani, for being a part of our program today. It's been a great conversation, and yes, this has been incredible. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
Great. Now remember, we do want you all to connect with us and let us know what you thought of this conversation. Go to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, use #womeninvest, #girlsinvest, and #weforshe. We'd also like to thank all of you for listening. You've been listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. This show is produced by the State of Women Radio Network, the first radio network for women and girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls with Michelle Jaffe. Download our shows on iTunes or listen on demand right here on thestateofwomen.com, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on delivering the latest trends in investing, entrepreneurship, and global women's issues by and for women and girls.